Hello, and welcome to Nintendo World Report Connectivity, episode 352. I'm your host, Neil Ronahan. Joining me, as always, John Raritan.
Howdy, everybody.
So we are figuring out ways to talk about video games. I'm excited for Fire Emblem. Are you excited for Fire Emblem, John?
I might get it. There was a time in my life where I considered myself interested in Fire Emblem, and then Three Houses happened. And I was like, oh, maybe I hate Fire Emblem. So I'm kind of trying to get myself out of that mindset to try this one. We'll see.
It does seem like, I mean, depending on the Fire Emblem Engage preview that you read, it's like, it's right. An about face from Three Houses, or it is exactly like Three Houses in every way. In this case, I trust the only preview worth trusting is Matt Zwodniak's over at NintendoReport.com. But I mean, even still, I know Matt is, I don't know if I'd term him a Fire Emblem super fan, but somewhere in that ballpark.
He definitely enjoys an emblem or two.
Yeah. Definitely has history with the franchise.
Yeah. He's played more of them than I have.
Yeah. Same here. And I've played a bunch of them. My one big miss is I never really played Path of Radiance on GameCube, but I have played Radiant Dawn. I played both the Game Boy Advance ones. I played Shadow Dragon on DS, and then I played all of the ones Awakening and Beyond.
Yeah.
But I also play them like a weirdo where I just like doing the tactic stuff and occasionally like half pay attention to a story.
Yeah, I would skip a lot of the story content. I saw in Matt's preview he mentioned the story not being that great, and I was like, good.
Yeah, let's, cool. So I don't need to pay attention to that.
Yeah.
It's weird because like I do like some of the plot machinations, but it's just that I've never been that. And in like some of like the goofy character development that comes out in support combos, I enjoy it. Just that is all like superfluous content. I'm there for just give me some tactics with some unique characters.
Yep.
It jives well with me. I'm excited for Engage, though. I will likely be picking it up at launch.
Yeah, I might. I guess, I mean, I don't know what else. Nintendo doesn't have any other games, so.
Yeah, I think this is the first time that I'm really feeling the crunch of how many absolute garbage shovelware games come out on the eShop all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not like it's any, at least, I mean, Donald would know if it is dramatically different from past years, but there was something about like I put the screen cap up on Twitter when we get like the downloads email from Nintendo, where it was the first one of the new year and there's just like a list of 40 games, and I knew of maybe five of them before seeing them there, and most of them felt like they could have been pulled out of a name generator.
Well, and the other half of them are like weird, questionably adult puzzle games.
Yeah, so. AAA Clock 3, the Hentai edition.
Yeah. So there's like a whole other side of the eShop that we don't delve into. There aren't enough Zacks in the world to cover that side of the eShop.
But it is, I mean, I just feel a little bit of sameness with a lot of games because it feels like everything is like some derivative of a roguelike or a visual novel or an adventure game. And sometimes combinations of different genres float my boat, but a lot of the stuff that it feels like is coming out these days are things that I don't really want to mess with.
Yeah.
Not even from like the whimsical, like, oh, like this soccer game looks like it's going to suck, but I'll try it anyway, which sometimes I have that where I can go for a good sports, a good terrible sports game. It just doesn't seem fun.
You get into this loop of being the person who covers this certain type of game.
Yeah.
And then you kind of have to, even if you know going in, like this one ain't going to be it.
Yeah.
Like that's, I haven't posted it yet, but that's why I reviewed Mortal Shell. I didn't think that looked like it would run well on Switch, and spoilers, it does not. but at some point, I became a person who reviewed a lot of Souls-likes, and I'm not sure when or how that came about.
Yeah, I think I need to, I guess, while we're talking about things that we need to finish reviewing, the new Picross X, the game from Jupiter that came out, that came out in Japan earlier in the year, and then he brought it to America right before the holidays. It's fine. Part of the reason why I haven't written a review is that, like, it's not bad. It's just fine. It's focused a lot on completing small Picross puzzles very quickly, which I kind of like playing my Picross games like a crossword puzzle where it's a big one and I just take my time with it. as opposed to like here, solve a bunch of 5x5 Picross puzzles really, really fast.
Yeah.
It's like, I like that they tried something new. I just think that it's not totally for me, but they should finish that review.
Middle of the road reviews are sometimes the hardest ones to write. It's really easy to write about something that you really like or something that you think is really bad. But writing about something and saying, yeah, it's pretty good, that's like the most difficult review to write.
Yeah, because it's like, yeah, like there's nothing I really want to drag about Picross X. Like it's fine. I do enjoy playing it. I ultimately prefer a traditional Picross game, but I also, like I said, it's cool that they tried something new.
Yeah.
Other than that, just feel like I'm waiting for more games. 2023 is starting off slow, which is fine, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
So let's start this episode by going back in time. We're gonna do two time travel journeys. First, we're going to go back to the year of 1993, and then we're going to take a probably longer stop in the year 2013. So first, let's go to our listener mail from, you know what, Jerry Goblet, you are at a friend of the show level because you write in like every week.
It's appreciated. We should change Chariot Goblin's name every time so people think there's like way more people writing in.
If you want to be a friend of the show like Chariot Goblin, then send in some listener mail regularly to connectivity@nintendoreport.com. We love listener mail. It's fun. It helps us plan episodes, inspires us even.
Yeah.
But Chariot Goblin writes, "Hey, Connectivity. The year 1993 marked the release of the infamous Super Mario Brothers movie. During that year, Nintendo released the Super Mario All-Stars compilation and Yoshi's Safari. This year, we are getting a new Mario movie. They say history repeats itself. That is why I predict that we will see Super Mario Galaxy 2 and 3D Land re-release on Switch in some way and form. Although a possible Game Boy NSO app, which includes Mario games, would also fit that equivalent. For the Yoshi equivalent, we may see a new Yoshi platforming game, or maybe Yoshi Safari will release on NSO. What do you think? Thanks."
Well, starting from the end, I did think about Yoshi Safari. They've ported the only light gun game they've ever done. Virtual console thing was Duck Hunt.
No, didn't they do Hogan's Alley?
Did they?
I think they did on Wii U.
Yeah.
I think there were a couple.
Okay, well, I stand wildly corrected. Have they ever done a Super Nintendo one?
No, I don't think they've done anything with the Super Scope. Because I don't think the Super Scope did do as well as Duck Hunt did.
It wouldn't work as well on Switch as it did on like the Wii and Wii U, because once again, you're working purely with gyro as opposed to the infrared with a sensor bar, which is just more accurate.
Which I also I think it was the kind of thing where they did it for Duck Hunt, and because they did the work for, you know, using the emulator on NES for Duck Hunt, then you could apply that to other light gun games on NES.
Yeah, but that being said, I would love Yoshi's Safari. It's a game that I've barely touched. Like, I've never played all the way through it. I don't own a copy years ago. Of it.
I guess a couple years ago might have been like 7 years ago, maybe even longer. It was it was a decade ago.
It's still 2019, right?
I spent some eBay money and bought a Super Scope in. I'm now thinking back to the place where I lived, and it was a place that I lived from, I think, 2011 to 2013. So that kind of narrows the window as to when I played it.
Okay. Well, that's at least a decade then.
Yeah. Yeah. So I got a Super Scope 10 years ago somehow, and I think I almost had every Super Scope game at some point. I wound up selling some of them later. But I played through a bunch of them, and like Yoshi Safari was probably one of the best. Tin Star was also really cool from what I remember. Yeah. And like Battle Clash and Battle Clash, a sequel, but Yoshi Safari is one of those things that I'm not going to stand here and be like, it's a hidden gem that everybody should play, but it is like a part of Mario history that it would be cool to see more accessible, because it's weird. You are riding on Yoshi's back and you have a bazooka and you shoot Koopa kids. It's a first person shooter. You shoot Yoshi on the back of the head and he gets so pissed off at you.
Yeah, and it's like a weird Mode 7 thing, so it kind of feels like you're walking around through Mario Kart.
Yeah, it is kind of like Super Mario Kart visuals.
Yeah.
It's a neat game.
If Mario Kart were a first-person shooter.
do that in the Mario Kart 8 engine. They're not doing anything else with it right
now. That it does, you know, Yoshi's Safari has always, it kind of reminds me of Pokemon Snap.
Yeah.
Did you control Yoshi in Yoshi's Safari, or did he move automatically?
I think he moves automatically.
Okay, that's what I was thinking. Yeah, so like kind of like a Pokemon Snap thing. So you could do new Yoshi Safari, and everybody could think they won it, and then it would come out, and they'd be like, oh, this is kind of boring, actually.
This is something that I feel like used to come up more, and then people just kind of forgot about the developer good feel.
Yeah.
It's we are now looking at, what, 4 or 5 years since Goodfeel did a game with Nintendo. Like, if we don't hear a sign of life from Goodfeel working with Nintendo, I don't think they're ever making a game with Nintendo again.
I mean, did Crafted World surely did okay.
I don't think it was terrible, a
Switch game.
But that was also, keep in mind that Crafted World and there were a lot of smaller developers that Nintendo kind of stopped working with around that time period. Like, it really does seem that they work with Koei Tecmo more often, and Bandai Namco are the kind of studios that they're working with, as opposed to, you know, your good feels. I mean, I guess Grezzo's still doing work with them.
Yeah.
Alpha Dream is dead. Nintendo straight up killed. I mean, they didn't kill Alpha Dream, because Alpha Dream did try to exist after their Mario and Luigi faucet was turned off. But they did not last long. Mitchell Corporation, Aiding worked on Pikmin 3 Deluxe, I think. But
so who makes a new Yoshi game if Goodfeel doesn't?
I don't know. Like, what would we want out of? I mean, I know what we would want out of a new Yoshi game. It's Yoshi's new Yoshi's story.
Right. Yeah. As long as you keep the baby off him, that's really my only requirement. The bar is low.
I'm trying to think of who could make a creative platformer that theoretically would be a you know, someone working with Nintendo.
Hideo Kojima, probably.
You know,
Hideo Kojima presents new Yoshi Safari.
Because there's the whole thing with his Death Stranding. Mm-hmm. How you're just carrying stuff around. You just put stuff on Yoshi's back.
Imagine if that when that thing fell off your back, it started crying and floating away. And that's, yeah, has Death Stranding been a Yoshi's Island knockoff this entire time?
There's probably a mod to do that.
Mario.
There probably is. Indie developer is kind of the route that I almost wish they would go with Yoshi's story. Or just a new Yoshi game, not necessarily Yoshi's story. And even with, I don't think I WayForward needs to have an Advance Wars game come out before we can start thinking about them doing another.
I was thinking about that, and I think they've intentionally trapped Advance Wars in Purgatory, because as long as it remains sealed in the Shadow Realm, it cannot cause any wars.
Yeah.
If there's always an Advance, they're not going to make another one. This one is always about to come out. So it can't.
The last Advance Wars is in captivity. The galaxy, is at peace.
Yeah, exactly. It's a plan.
I do. This is one of those ones where somebody's going to respond and be like, this developer, and I'll be like, oh, yeah, that's a good one. We should have thought of that.
Yeah.
Just get Tezuka working with, I don't know. Because I don't think Goodfeel's coming back, and I do think that there is Nintendo working with these smaller Japanese developers, unless there's a relationship that is very solidified, in the case of Grezzo, I think, then I don't really know. I don't think it's possible. But Team Ninja's Yoshi
game. There you go. What still exists that hasn't been bought by Sony or Microsoft and hasn't shut down?
Here's my weird thing, and I don't even know, this feels like a monkey's paw that I don't even want, but I was just thinking about how I think it'd be cool if there was an attempt to make a 3D Yoshi game.
Yeah.
Give it to Playtonic.
Give it to the Kirby team.
Yeah, yeah.
Do Forgotten Land, but for Yoshi. Because I feel like Kirby and Yoshi, there's something similar about their platformers.
And I don't
kind of chill and about eating things.
Yeah, like, and I don't think it's something that would happen, but after we've seen like the 3D Mario team, you know, EPD Tokyo, I think they've kind of, having Yoshi be a power up in a 3D Mario game, I don't think has totally worked out that well. And in Mario Sunshine, like, I mean, that is a game that you hold in higher esteem than I do, but I don't hate it. But I think that Yoshi's implementation in that game is maybe like a couple ticks above Blue Coins for crappy parts about that game.
Yoshi's implementation of that game is objectively hilarious because his only mechanic is to projectile vomit indefinitely. Yeah. Like, that's the whole thing. And the different ones barf different colors.
Yep.
And it's high art.
I tried to do my, like, deep dive into why Super Mario Galaxy 2 is a game that I don't like as much compared to other 3D Mario games. And I kind of pinned it down to, I think the levels are too long, and I think Yoshi does not control well in that game. I think the using the pointer in conjunction with moving around is not a great feeling in that game.
His two mechanics in that, from what I remember, it's admittedly been a hot second, but his two mechanics in that is, yeah, he's either a grapple hook, which is like fine but awkward, or he eats the speedy things and he just sprints way too fast. Like, there's never a time where using Yoshi is good. It's always feels a little worse than just being Mario. He doesn't feel like a power up.
If you were to make a 3D Yoshi game where he is not a power up, but he is the game, mm-hmm. I'd like to see that. And I think EPD Tokyo, like, I hope to God, like, it's been 5.5 years, like, just make something after Super Mario Odyssey. Holy crap. But there is that rumor that they're making a Donkey Kong game or something. So I don't think they would be working on Yoshi, but I would like to see EPD Tokyo make a stab at making a 3D Yoshi game.
I think Miyamoto goes back to the shattered remains of Argonaut Software and
they can make that 3D Yoshi game.
They're like working. They're like, we can finally revive Croc. And then Miyamoto buys Croc and says, it's a Yoshi game now. And then walks out the door and they're just like, no.
And then Miyamoto retires.
Yep. Drop the mic. Be beautiful.
But they should make a new Yoshi game. But as far as going to the other part of that, of if they were going to do Galaxy 2, it was going to be a part of 3D All-Stars. And I do sincerely think that a big part of the reason why they didn't do Galaxy 2 is because mapping Yoshi to work with the Switch controls in a good way was difficult,
especially for like Switch Lite users.
Yeah, because I think that the way that they implemented the pointer controls into Galaxy 1 was kind of bad, and Galaxy 2 just takes that and makes it way more of an emphasis.
It's so integral that you would almost have to have your right hand off of a Switch Lite the entire time you're playing.
Yeah,
and it would just, I don't know if it'd be possible. I can almost guarantee you that they tried it. Like, yeah. I don't think they didn't do it just because they didn't feel like it. I would bet you money that there is a port of Galaxy 2 on Switch that they tried and decided this doesn't work.
Yeah. And I don't really, I mean, 3D Land, like,
3D it, Land would be, I actually like 3D Land better than 3D World, so I'd be down for an HD 3D Land.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is I feel like Galaxy 2 and 3D Land would both require a lot of work. And it's the kind of work that I'd rather them make a new game than bring a 3DS game from 10 years ago, 12 years ago.
3D Land, the only really awkward part would be there's a few like bonus areas that are reliant on the 3D where you need it to see an optical illusion. But like the base game,
it's good.
It's good. And I assume that, you know, if we can port Miitopia, surely we can port 3D Land. Yeah.
But I think the we kind of talked about it, I think, on a past episode about how Nintendo's probably going to have an NSO subscription of some sort, like that kind of booster. And we've seen a lot of smoke about Game Boy games coming to NSO. So I would not be surprised if we see that and have Mario Land 1 and 2 show up as playable sometime this year.
That's one of those things where it's like, we literally know, right? Like, there's been data breaches that are literally just like, yep, here's all the ROMs that they currently have on the service. Here's the emulator.
Yep.
Like it's there. So it's it's gonna happen. But yeah, one of these days. I don't think Lunar Chase was on that list though, which remains a crime.
No.
You know what else came out in 1993 though, if we're gonna just do things that happened in 1993, was Star Fox.
Star Fox 3 coming out this fall. Let's go.
We could do Star Fox 3. We could remaster the first one, which
they've done.
Has come up multiple times and has never actually come out, but
so let's go to I guess the feature topic for the episode. So John and I realized that this is the 10th anniversary of the infamous Wii U Direct, where Nintendo announced a bunch of games that wouldn't come out for a very long time.
Yes.
And like, to give context to people who might not have been paying attention to back then, or maybe they just don't remember the specifics
of
it. You could
theoretically, you know, I believe there have been a couple times where my nephews have listened to this show, in which case you literally weren't born yet.
So the Wii U came out, you know, a little over 10 years ago, November 2012, and it very quickly became evident that the Wii U was not going to be a success.
Yep.
Nintendo tried to do some Hail Marys and stuff, but coming out of the gate, like sold decent amount on launch, and then it just cratered. Yeah. The anecdote that I always find funny is that at the time in 2012, Nintendo World Ports traffic was like all time high for most of the year. The Wii U comes out, craters.
Yeah.
Like, hilariously so, like to the point where I wasn't even mad about it. It was just funny seeing how there was so much like excitement about Nintendo leading up to their new console coming out, and then the console came out and nobody cared. But yeah, the Wii U were the dark time. That was the dark times for certain. But there was still a little bit of hope. There were games that were announced, games that we knew about that were coming out. Hopefully, 2013 was going to be a year packed with video games. This is where the joke that a lot of people probably don't get, because it's been a very long time, of Nintendo's launch window, which I do believe I made a feature on the website that was comparing Nintendo's quote launch window, because Nintendo had a bunch of Wii U games that were listed as launch window that did not come out for over a year after
launch.
It was
launch, a wide open window.
That is like a launch house. Like, it's just not a window. It's an entire open air place to live.
Very open floor plan.
But then in January 2013, after we had New Super Mario Brothers U, Nintendo Land, Sing Party, Nintendo published a karaoke game for some reason by the guys who made DJ Hero, RIP. I think that studio died. And then Ninja Gaiden 3 and stuff, and there were a few eShop games, not too many, but what was going to come out in 2013? What we were going to get in the first quarter, first half of the year? It was kind of unknown at the time. We knew Game & Wario was coming sometime soon. Lego City Undercover was a game that was going to be coming out soon as well. So we got to, I forget the exact date. I have our.
It was the 23rd was when the Direct actually happened.
January 23rd, 2013. The Direct comes out. It is 35 plus minutes long.
Yeah.
Around then. The first half of it, it takes 18 minutes before we get any kind of comment on game on like big games coming out. It is Satoru Iwata comes out. There is no intro. It is just Satoru Iwata speaking in English, talking to you about the Wii U, about Miiverse, promising system updates, talking about virtual console but like everything is couched in these apologies.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, it's sad to watch. I mean, a little bit, because Satoru Iwata is that, you know, went on to die 2 years after this.
As so many often do.
But at this point, we did like some kind of bowel cancer, I think.
Yeah.
I forget the exact cause of death for him. But at this point, like, I don't think that had been diagnosed, so we had no idea of anything foreboding. But it was like there was just such a desperation in this Direct. But at the same time, I really appreciated this more down home marketing presentation from Nintendo. It feels like everything these days is like polished to the extent of it, it feels like they're putting a barrier in between the audience and their games.
This almost feels too honest at times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I think Nintendo is for the better in how they run Nintendo Directs and their marketing now. Because it does make it less, it makes it less personal, but it is truly more direct and to the point. Like their headline format that they found out that they landed upon with Nintendo Directs, I think works very well as an effective marketing technique. There is something that I really miss about Satoru Iwata just like having a conversation with us, it feels.
Yeah. Yeah, he just sits you down for a family meeting.
Yep. And he's like, listen, we're not going to have all of Virtual Console updated for Wii U at first. What would you say if you could get Balloon Fight for 30 cents?
The man loved his Balloon Fight.
What about F-Zero? Punch-Out? Kirby? Super Metroid? 30 cents, buddy.
Now,
only 30 cents for 30 days.
So this was part of 2013 was the 30th anniversary of the Famicom in Japan. And so for several months, they were releasing a game every month on Virtual Console. And some of these launched before the formal launch of the Virtual Console. But for the 30 days after they launched, they would be 30 cents.
Yeah.
Which I will say, I bought every single one of these.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because they were 30 cents. It was a good marketing tactic. And also, what else was I going to play on my Wii U?
Yeah.
But yeah, Balloon Fight, F-Zero, Punch-Out, Kirby's Adventure, Super Metroid, Yoshi, and Donkey Kong.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, not like Yoshi's Island and Donkey Kong Country. No, like the Yoshi puzzle game and Donkey Kong the arcade.
Yep.
Not a perfect lineup.
No. There's a big focus on Miiverse in this direct as well. Miiverse was really cool.
Yes. I like a lot about it. I like a lot about, like, there was a good chunk of this where they were pitching the concept of, like, because they were talking about its integration with the TV app, which, once again, if you were not around for the Wii U, there was a TV app that would tie into your cable provider, and you could essentially see like your listings and kind of watch TV through. Well, not through it, but you would have your gamepad that would have all the information on what you were watching on it.
Yeah. Like a second screen, like.
Yeah. And so they pitched the idea of like being on Miiverse and watching a sports game and chatting with people on Miiverse while you're watching it, which, like, you know, yeah, that was neat for the time.
Yeah.
It didn't go anywhere. TV was somehow a more significant failure than the Wii U, but.
Yeah. I forget how long it took. It got shut down in America. It never even came out in Europe.
Yeah, it didn't last long. He does highlight Miiverse's verified account system, which to this day remains better than Twitter's verified account system.
even that before was Elon.
Before Elon bought it. Yeah, it's Miiverse has always had a better verification system than Twitter.
And there's a lot of promises about like system updates to make the system run better and different communities. In this first half of the direct, which once again, it takes 18 minutes until like kind of games are talked about. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess like Virtual Console games are talked about. Like the little bit in this part that's mentioned about games are, you know, Pikmin 3 having a photo mode so you can share those pictures on Miiverse, or Wii Fit U having closed user communities. That functionality was going to open up before Wii Fit U. I forget if they said Wii Fit U launching this summer, which it did not. I believe it didn't launch until like October or November because everything on the Wii U got delayed.
They might have even said spring.
But yeah, it takes, then we get to 18 minutes where Iwata confirms that there will be no new games in January and February. And then kind of went into, you know, the please understand apology, talking about how, you know, we always like to have a good influx of games coming out in after a system launches, but we looked at our development schedules and realized this wasn't going to work. This was Nintendo getting their butts kicked by HD development.
Yeah, they don't list any specific games that were delayed, but you get the general impression that they would have liked all of this stuff to be coming out earlier.
Yeah.
And that just their entire lineup was sort of being unofficially delayed.
It is also the kind of thing that it does, hearing this and seeing what the Switch would eventually become, where 2017 for the Switch was kind of perfect.
Yep.
And that you had, I think the only month that a new game did not come out was the month that Mario and Rabbids came out in 2017.
Right, which like borderline, and they actually did a similar thing this year where they had a pretty solid lineup of first party stuff, with Mario and Rabbids filling one of those spots.
Yeah.
Which apparently, according to Ubisoft, underperformed.
Honestly, not that shocked, because, I mean, it is an anecdotal of people being really into Nintendo that are talking about it, but I think everybody's kind of conditioned to not buy Ubisoft games at launch.
Right, when you're going to put your game on sale for $20 a week later, why would anybody buy it for $60? Yeah.
Yep.
You've done this to yourself.
But yeah, then after Iwata's apology, he does lay out the steady stream of games from spring to summer, listing Game & Wario, Wii Fit U, Pikmin 3, LEGO City Undercover, and Wonderful 101. All of those games would come out this year. Game & Wario, I believe, was the... Or no, LEGO City Undercover came out in, I think, March or April. Then Game & Wario came out in, I believe, June. Pikmin 3 was July or August, depending on your region, I believe. Then Wonderful 101 was, I think, like first week of September. Or maybe it might have been... No, I think Wonderful 101 is one of those games that was... technically still came out in summer, but it was came out on like September 15th.
Sure.
And then Wii Fit U came out later. Then we actually get to the part that everybody always talks about, where just a bunch of games are touched on. We get Platinum, new trailer for Wonderful 101. Then Iwata mentions Bayonetta 2, saying that development is going well, but that's not the right time to discuss details. And then they show Bayonetta's butt.
Yeah, there's like a weird segment of a guy animating Bayonetta walking and talking about the leather, and it's kind of uncomfortable.
Yeah, there was like a video like showing like how like it was like footage from Platinum of developers and stuff. And then we just get a lot of like Iwata telling us about things, where he says that Smash Brothers, there will be more details on Smash Brothers for 3DS and Wii U at E3.
Yeah,
we are told of in the EAD Tokyo team working on a new 3D Mario. There's nothing to show. It will be playable at E3. That game would later become Super Mario 3D World, and it would actually come out at the end of 2013.
Yeah.
Mario Kart for Wii. That was another one where Iwata just said, we're working on a Mario Kart. It's going to be playable later that year at E3. That would be Mario Kart 8. That would come out a little over a year after this direct.
It's honestly kind of surprising that I guess they would be playable at E3, and yet they didn't have even a screenshot of them.
I mean, I think some of that was they didn't have marketing materials planned, because I don't think they expected to be in this position.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like this was a lot of like, I can understand the marketing reason for why this direct happened. It's because they're like, we want people to know that this actually has a future.
Yeah. It's just surprising that like even a screenshot. You know, like anything, because like we'll see in a little bit later, like, you know, when they get to Yoshi, they do show a tiny clip of gameplay.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised there was nothing like that for these other ones. It was just him listing off that like, yeah, the team that makes Mario is making Mario. Trust me.
Yep. We have put a Mario Kart out on every console. We will also be doing that with this one.
Yep. Yeah. Just desperately clawing at like anything that they can mention.
Wii Party U is a game that would come out. Was Wii Party U? I think Wii Party U came out in 2013. Wii Party U is really good. Yeah, it is. It came out October 2013.
Okay.
Wii Party U rules.
And they did show Wii Party U.
Yeah, they did.
Like pretty extensively.
Then Yoshi's Woolly World did not get a name. It was just a new Yoshi game from Goodfeel. And the footage that we are shown and the screens that we are shown do not reflect what the final game would be. Kind of showing how early that footage was probably it was in development, because this game would not come out for nearly 2.5 years.
Yeah, the footage that they show looks a lot more like Epic Yarn.
Yeah, yeah, it looks like kind of a middle ground between what they would wind up doing for Yoshi's Woolly World.
I do find it interesting that they mention, this is the only game where they mention the graphics. Like he points out specifically that it will leverage Wii U graphics and hardware capabilities. And none of these other games does he point out that they have pretty graphics. It's just Yoshi. So
yeah,
he must have been particularly impressed with it or something.
Then we get a trailer that is honestly hilarious, knowing what the game eventually becomes, is a crossover of Shin Megami Tensei and Fire Emblem. There is zero gameplay. It is just a bunch of artwork from existing games, none of which actually reflects what this game would eventually become when it came out nearly 3 years after this Direct came out, at least in Japan. It would be over 3 years before it came out in the West. This game would become Tokyo Mirage Sessions Sharp FE. It is just, it is wild seeing this trailer.
Because it's just like exist, it's not even like new artwork, it's just the existing key art for various Shin Megami Tensei games of like the main characters who are not in Tokyo Mirage Sessions. Like, it's, yeah. And then like some the same thing with Fire Emblem, who at least some of those characters do wind up showing up in the game. But it's very clearly just like somebody Googled PNGs of all of these characters and like slapped them on screen and moved them across.
Like, it is wild that Shin Megami Tensei 5 was a game that was also revealed very, very early. Like, mm-hmm. I think because that was revealed January 2017, and what that game came out at the end of 2021. So you know, over 4 years from when it was announced. But even that initial reveal trailer for Shin Megami Tensei 5 is at least like mildly evocative of what that game would become.
Yes, whereas this is just not.
Yeah,
this is I don't think the person who made this trailer had any. This was probably that somebody went to a marketing person and said, there's going to be a Shin Megami Tensei Fire Emblem crossover. And they went, okay. And that was all they knew about it based on what's in this trailer.
The one part that stood out to me when they do show off this, you know, because this was an Atlas developed game.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of announced as such that it was a, you know, development partner that we're working with. There is a comment from Iwata that I didn't really make note of at the time, but it is very prescient. For what Nintendo would be doing going forward, is that basically says that the scope of development is getting so big, now that they're making HD games on Wii U, that Nintendo can't do all of the development internally. Which, if you look at what Nintendo is now, where it feels, I mean, there was, I think, what was it, 2019, where like half of the games were co-developed by Koei Tecmo.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Smash Brothers is primarily made by Bandai Namco. Bandai Namco also has assisted with Mario Kart games, and probably a lot of other projects that I can't think of off the top of my head. But Nintendo now relies on, like, it's not like the smaller co-developers like we were talking about Goodfeel earlier. Like, it is bigger borderline. I mean, it's bigger companies that function as publishers for their own games that their development studios are assisting Nintendo.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was, they stated their intention with this, and they followed through with it. It would become a major part of their portfolio of, you know, even kind of, there's a little bit of a precursor here to Hyrule Warriors getting announced, because Iwata does tease that there's more announcements like these on the way, and that would be one of them. I think Hyrule Warriors would be announced by the end of this year, I think, because it came out in 2014.
Yeah. So it must have been in development. It's too bad that these things couldn't have got into development just a little bit sooner.
Yeah,
because it feels like if things had just started a couple months earlier than they did, that this weird beginning of the year lull wouldn't have happened. Like, 2013 is kind of the year, like we talked last week about people freaking out that there's only five games announced for this year for Nintendo. Like, 2013 was kind of the year where like that was actually valid. Like, you going into that year and be like, boy, there's nothing. And then you get to this direction, you go, oh, there might still be nothing. But then we get to Zelda.
Yeah. This is, Iwata relinquishes hosting and passes it over to Eiji Inuma, our Zelda overlord.
I had forgotten that we found out, or that anybody even mentioned what would ultimately become Breath of the Wild this early. Like, obviously, we didn't see anything. Inuma just came out. And in like the vaguest, most mysterious way possible, said that their whole premise behind Zelda on Wii U was going to be to rethink the conventions of Zelda. And he specifically highlights things like doing things in order, playing by yourself. He mentioned starting rethinking things in Skyward Sword, but that they weren't able to change the linear structure of the game in that. And he wanted to do that in the next one. But then he also made the comment that he wanted to get back to the basics of Zelda. And if you look at all that stuff now in context, because keep in mind, this is still, like, this is before not only Breath of the Wild, but before Link Between Worlds. And so you look at that stuff now and you go, okay, doing things in order, getting rid of the linear structure, like that came up in Link Between Worlds and Breath of the Wild, obviously. Playing by yourself wouldn't come up in any of those, but it did come up in Triforce Heroes.
Yep. And even, I mean, Hyrule Warriors to an extent.
Yeah. And then this idea of getting back to basics, when you look at that for Breath of the Wild, but then in the context of realizing that at this point, where they probably were in development for Breath of the Wild, they were in a phase now where we know that they were testing out their chemistry system using the original Zelda's art style. Like yeah. They had built a bunch of stuff in like a top-down NES-style Zelda prototype to see how things could interact with each other. And so you have him making that comment about getting back to the basics of Zelda and knowing now that like that was probably in about in line with that point in development is just kind of fascinating to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just crazy to look back on that. He was not all this stuff would apply to Breath of the Wild, but he was kind of laying out like, here's what Zelda is going to do for the next 5-6 years.
It is also baffling to me that so this was, I mean, it wasn't an official announcement of Breath of the Wild, but did kind of say like, you know, we're working on a future Zelda title to come out on right. Wii U. So this was January 2013. Breath of the Wild would come out a little over 4 years later, March 2017. So essentially 4 years from this announcement is when Breath of the Wild came out. The sequel to Breath of the Wild, Tears of the Kingdom, was announced at E3 2019. By the time that comes out in May 2023, allegedly, it will have been almost the same amount of time, which is just, it's insane.
Yeah.
It's so weird to think that, like, it's more that, like, you look at how long Zelda games kind of sit in development, and you look at, like, I mean, Ocarina of Time and Link to the Past, there's 6 year gap between, I mean, and then you have a run after Ocarina of Time where you have three new 3D Zelda games in an 8 year span, which yeah. isn't like, I mean, like you think about some of the ways that company, like developers churn out games, especially big publishers. It's not like it's an impressive number, but like, yeah, you had 98 Ocarina, 2000 Majora's, 2002, 2003 for Wind Waker, then 2006 Twilight Princess. Like that is a pretty like consistent, like we're releasing Zelda games every couple years. And then from 2006 to 2011, 5 years Skyward Sword.
Yeah.
Then, I mean, yeah, like the announcement was 4 years, but from Skyward Sword to when Breath of the Wild came out, it is 5.5 years. And from when Breath of the Wild came out and Tears of the Kingdom comes out, it's going to be over 6 years. It's just like, it's so wild to think that Tears of the Kingdom, a game that is supposedly, from what we've seen, is kind of a sequel to Breath of the Wild, is going to be one of the Zelda games that is arguably the longest in development.
It better be good.
Like, it is, taking this to talk about Tears of the Kingdom a little bit, like, I think there's one thing that people probably are not going to realize how much work went into it, which is the fact that Breath of the Wild was a Wii U game.
Right.
That is a game that was made to run on Wii U that was then ported to Switch. Tears of the Kingdom is going to be a game that is made for Switch. I think there's probably more technical redoing for Tears of the Kingdom then people are probably going to notice, because it's at the end of the day it is still on the same hardware that Breath of the Wild is, but it should hope to God it runs a little better. Not that Breath of the Wild ran poorly, but like that frame rate took some hits, but it's probably gonna look pretty similar to Breath of the Wild visually,
right? But if you do that, but then you give Monolith 6 years to tidy up the engine, I mean, just look at what they were able to do between 2017 yeah. and 2022 with Xenoblade engine, and you apply that same knowledge to its kind of sister engine in Breath of the Wild, I suspect they'll be able to get a lot out of it. Not to mention that, you know, very high bitrate sound that was exclusive to the Switch version and didn't sound exactly like the Wii U version. That was a thing they pitched as a feature of the Switch version of Breath of the Wild, was that the sound was at a higher bitrate. And like, dude, maybe. Like, yeah. You can't tell, but okay, sure.
Like I can't wait for Breath of the Wild. I can't wait for Tears of the Kingdom. because it really, like, I feel like I'm at a point with that game where baseline, I'm going to have a good time. Like, I don't know if it's going to be, it's,
oh, yeah,
it'll be very hard for it to be as revelatory as Breath of the Wild was.
Right. But yeah, you can't do that again.
But I feel like baseline, it's going to be like, oh, I get to do the stuff that I did in 2017 again. That's fun.
Right. Well, I'm at a point right now where I feel like just, I've had multiple times where I've just gone like, man, I could stand to just start a new save in Breath of the Wild. Like, I would be fine, yeah, with literally playing Breath of the Wild again this year. So if it's that, but with new features and some new locations, like, I'll probably be into that. Just put dungeons in it, damn it.
Yeah, but it is like, if I feel like the floor for that game, I guess there's some dark timeline where it just sucks, but I'm gonna pretend I never said that and we can move on with our day. But I think that, like, the floor for this game is it'll be like Breath of the Wild again, which, you know, not as, yeah, revelatory, because it won't be like that. Felt like it was a new genre, even if people have made open world games before and blah 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 blah. But in the context of Nintendo and how they did it, it was executed in a way that I don't think a lot of open world games have executed in that manner.
And look at the open world games that have been developed since and tell me that Breath of the Wild didn't change that genre.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's pretty obvious.
I think the one that I point to is, didn't Assassin's Creed Origins come out before it or the same year?
Was it Origins or Odyssey? One of those.
I think
Odyssey might have been just after. Odyssey might have been, yeah, like 2018.
Yeah. But it's the one that I think Origins and Odyssey for Assassin's Creed, which are both very good games, like, not, yeah, identical to Breath of the Wild, but I think they do a lot of similar, like, it's the Ubisoft version of how fresh Breath of the Wild feels.
They did stumble into the climbing thing. Like, both Breath of the Wild and Assassin's Creed kind of stumbled into that, like, what if you could just sort of climb anywhere?
Yeah.
Thing at about the same time. But as big a thing as that is, it's a very surface level, like, that's not what makes Breath of the Wild feel like Breath, yeah, of the Wild.
I just, if you were to put Assassin's Creed Origins and Odyssey in front of me, I would be like, oh, they were inspired by Breath of the Wild, and then I look to see when they came out and I'm like, oh, I guess they weren't, because it would have been impossible for, because I should just look it up to confirm. I think Origins was 2016 and Odyssey was 2017.
I think, yeah, Odyssey might have been 2018. No, they were, yeah, they weren't annualized at that point. They had just come out of annualization.
Here, let's look at Origins. Okay, no, Origins was 2017.
Okay. Yeah, and I will say, like, Origins does not get, like, the world design of Breath of the Wild even close.
Yeah, Odyssey was 2018.
Okay. Oh, so those were just a year apart?
It is funny, because, like, Origins feels like a prequel to Odyssey in some respects. Because, like, Odyssey is huge in comparison.
Yeah. Well, Origins was their soft...
yeah,
reboot of this, yeah, like, it changed so much from the last one, and kind of shifted toward not Dark Souls combat, but, like, a more, what do they call it, thoughtful combat,
yeah,
system. And so, yeah, Origins was sort of a prototype and it has some rough edges, but Assassin's Creed Odyssey, legitimately, even if you don't like the Assassin's Creed games, I will maintain that Assassin's Creed Odyssey is a great game,
yeah, just
outside of its series, and yeah, definitely has some things in common with Breath of the Wild.
Yep. But yeah, floor for Tears of the Kingdom is Breath of the Wild again. The ceiling for Tears of the Kingdom is, like, somewhere in heaven.
Right. Well, there is flying, apparently.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Like, because there is like, the version that they seem to be teasing me seems incredible.
Like, right.
Like, if they execute on that stuff where it's like, you're just gonna go into the air and there's gonna be all these things floating there and there might be some catacombs and it's gonna be crazy, and look, it's the old Hyrule but we made it different, yeah, like, it could be really cool. But yeah, Anuma gave us the first taste of what would eventually become Breath of the Wild. Here we also did see Wind Waker HD, which, yep, they promised it in the right way, because this would come out in fall 2013.
Yeah, they showed us those very early, what looked like it really looks like just something rendered in Blender. Yep. Like, it looks kind of close to what the final game would look like, but what if you put them side by side,
no, it doesn't.
Yep.
And yeah, they gave some hints about like tuning up the overall game experience. They don't say anything about like the quick sale or the Triforce hunt in this.
Yeah. Video, I do like the joke.
It's there.
It becomes a joke now where Iwata is just like, I think it's Iwata's talking about Wind Waker HD, right?
Iwata comes in toward the end. He talks about the GameCube.
Yeah, because he says that, yeah, like, you might not have played Wind Waker because the GameCube had a small install base. Little did he know that the GameCube's small install base would be like 10 million more than
the Wii U will save Wind Waker.
Yes. It is funny that, like, Wind Waker has been available to like a fifth of the current Switch audience as far as maybe a little bit more than that, but not for long, because I think GameCube is a little over 20 million. I think Wii U was around 13 million. So yeah, around 30 to 35 million people had an opportunity to ever play Wind Waker.
Right. There's probably some overlap in there.
Yeah.
It's probably almost all overlap.
So we had an end one for this.
Yeah. And it's like arguably the closest thing to a real trailer and announcement in this entire direct, which maybe that's why they saved it for the end.
Yeah. It's a game, just new title for Monolith Soft, just called X.
Yeah. And this is obviously very early Xenoblade X.
Yeah, because this would not come out until the end of 2015. It came out in 2015 in Japan. It came out it came out December 2015 in the West.
Yes, because we were playing it. We were playing version at E3 2015, because Jared brought his Wii U to the Airbnb.
And I think it came out in spring, I think. It was a little bit before E3 2015.
Yeah, I just remember playing it in Japanese on Jared's Wii U, having no idea what was happening because it was in Japanese. But just like running around in Oblivia and just be like, this is incredible.
Yeah, it's still I really need to sit down and replay that game at some point. And when I do, I'll jinx it and it'll be ported to Switch.
That'd be great. Please do that. Yeah, they showed off. I mean, they don't show off much of the world. They pretty much just stick you in Primordia, the first area in this trailer. But they show off some combat, mostly like solo combat with a very, very early HUD. The world is much more barren than it would ultimately wind up being. But they do tease you with the mech and flying at the end of this trailer. And also some of the music they use is music that would wind up in the final game. And it's still a great teaser trailer for this game. Probably earlier than it should have been shown, but like in comparison to everything else in this direct, this one feels like an actual thing that you would put in a Nintendo Direct.
Yeah, this is probably the only thing that feels like a modern Nintendo Direct thing.
And then they make some vague promises that they will have news on the 3DS and also third-party Wii U stuff. Ha ha ha.
What's that?
Yeah, I'm sure they have a lot of news on that.
Ubisoft got delayed and now it's not exclusive. Or Rayman. Yeah. Rayman Legends got delayed and now it's not exclusive.
Ubisoft did support this thing like for a stupidly long time. Like they did multiple rounds of Assassin's Creed on this thing.
They did Splinter Cell. At least a Splinter Cell.
Yeah, well, the only Splinter Cell that came out they put every Splinter Cell that came out during the Wii U's lifespan on it. They did Watch Dogs like a year after it came out everywhere else. Yeah, like Ubisoft was pretty prevalent on this thing, at least in comparison to any other third party, and like arguably Nintendo.
Just Dance on Wii U was actually pretty fun.
I mean, it's a game that was kind of designed for the Wii. So it makes sense.
So here's what it's like. I don't disagree with you, but I also don't. I think like news of their support is kind of overrated over time. I came across, I think this is everything. Assassin's Creed 3 and 4, so they supported it with Assassin's Creed game for a year, because Assassin's Creed 4 came out in 2013.
Yeah, Assassin's Creed 3 had, like, just come out. Like, it came out, like, a month before, because I remember I bought that on Wii U before the Wii U actually came out. Like, it was in stores on Wii U before the system was.
Child of Light, Cloudberry Kingdom was an indie game that they published. There is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 different Just Dance games.
That's too many.
Marvel Avengers Battle for Earth, which is bad.
Ooh, yeah.
Rabbids Land, also bad. Rayman Legends, pretty good.
Good.
The Spurfs 2, which was apparently made by WayForward.
Masterpiece. I'll bet all the Smurfs had very jiggly bits.
Splinter Cell Blacklist. Watch decent. Dogs. Your
Not
Shape.
As decent.
Your Shape Fitness Evolved, which did lead to a very good Scott Thompson video review that I believe he uses his baby, who's now 10 years old, as a prop. And Zombie U.
Oh, I totally forgot about Zombie U.
Yeah.
Zombie U, I replayed that a little bit for the Wii U anniversary video, and that game still kind of spooks me out.
Yeah, it's really good.
It does a really good job of building tension when absolutely nothing is happening. Yeah, that's that direct.
Yep. And I think that's this episode of Connectivity. If you want to write in, you can do it, man. Just step right up. Email us at connectivity@nintendoreport.com. You can hit us up on Twitter, too. As long as that lasts, Connectivity NWR. We do stuff there occasionally. I'll get a notification if you tweet at it. So, do it. Why not? Yeah, that's about it. Twilight Princess Game Club. Man, I don't know when we're doing that.
Soon? Did we say end of the month?
Yeah. I think that's we need to figure out a date for that.
Yeah.
We're gonna have a special guest. So that's fun.
That's right.
None of you probably know who they are.
Eiji Aonuma.
But they're cool. They did a really good Paper Mario video a while ago that I
That's
that
your I liked hint.
A lot. Yeah.
It's Arlo.
Yeah. it was about reasons why Origami King rules, so not it wasn't
oh,
that
much. So
Muppet.
Definitely not Arlo yeah. then.
By yeah. the way, Paper Mario the Origami King, that game still rocks.
Yeah.
If there is, I guess spoilers for Paper Mario the Origami King to an extent. Do you know anything about the plot of that game?
I know that there's paper.
Okay.
And folding.
So.
And pencils.
You have partner characters and some of them go away over time. And I guess maybe I'll just say this somewhat vaguely without spoiling a game that I think everybody should play because of rules. So my 4-year-old has been enjoying playing Paper Mario. He is obsessed with the Ba-Bomb character because we're in like the second part of that game where you get Bobby the Ba-Bomb. I also have my save file from the end of the game that he occasionally boots that up and he messes around with it and he's like, where's Bobby? Where's the bomb? And if you've played that game, you know the plight that I'm in right now. Game still rules. I'm probably going to hide it from my child until he can process grief. See y'all next week.
Bye.
This was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details.